නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස විරිය සමතං අදිත්තහ ඉන්ද්‍රිය සමා ඉන්ද්‍රියානං ච සමතං පටිවිජ්ජ තතච නිමිත්තං ගන්හා හීති දිය Venerable brother, dear Dhamma friends. So actually we were discussing Sona Sutta, which is available in Anguttara Nikaya Chakkanipata, where Buddha admonish Venerable Sona. So if I summarize what we did last time, Venerable Sona is coming from a very rich family, and he ordained at his young age, and he is diligently practicing at Rajagaha, and it is called in the Cool Grove. So Cool Grove is a cemetery and it's a secluded place, and Venerable Sona at that time practicing there, and he was doing so much of walking meditation, and his walking path even shed blood, and people have and the monks have seen that, noticed that, because he is exerting too much effort. And similarly he was later thinking, now I am one of the diligently practicing monks, but nothing could achieve so far. I am one of the blessed ones, most energetic disciples. Yet my mind has not been liberated from the taints by non-clinging. Now, liberation is something that those diligent practitioners are anticipated, but yet he couldn't achieve it. There may be various other, his friends, colleagues have already attained, but Venerable Sona unfortunately couldn't achieve it. Now he was thinking disrobing because he did his best but nothing has happened. And he was thinking to disrobe, and after becoming a layperson, since he is from a rich family, he can spend some money, wealth, and even enjoy senses and again do some meritorious deeds as well. Now this was the thought going on in his mind. So fortunately this was noticed by the Buddha, who was in Rajagaha, in the vulture's peak. And then Buddha immediately appeared in front of Venerable Sona, and he is presenting a very interesting simile. He is talking the simile of a lute. So he is asking if the threads of the lute would be too tight, will it provide the proper sound? Then Venerable Sona say no. So if the strings were too loose, will it provide the proper sound? Then again, Venerable Sona mentioned no. Then if it is properly or moderated manner, if it is tightened, not too loose, not too tight, won't that produce the proper sound? Then Venerable Sona accept yes, so that if it is properly tuned, not too tight, not too loose, then only it will produce proper sound. So Buddha used this as a simile and admonished. Therefore, Sona resolved on a balance of energy. Now you need to balance your energy, achieve evenness of the spiritual faculties, and take up the object there. Viriya samatang adittaha indriyanancha samatang pativijja tattha cha nimittan ganhahi. Now this is very important, like we discussed last time in length. There are five faculties, spiritual faculties, saddha, viriya, sati, samadhi, panya, and those faculties are to be balanced. Saddha has to be balanced with wisdom, panya, and then viriya, the effort, has to be balanced with samadhi, the concentration. This whole purpose, this whole equilibrium is maintained by or supervised by mindfulness, the sati, that is lying in the middle. So this is very interesting situation, because even though we are talking here, you might even read this from the book, but what is really mentioned here cannot understand until we get into practice. So through the practice only we can understand what is really going on. What is this saddha, what is this viriya, what is this sati, what is this samadhi, what is this panya, and how all these things are to be balanced. So as we discuss, so at the beginning you may have a lot of need to have a lot of energy, because mind is wandering. There are the hindrances. But once hindrances are fairly subsided, now you need to properly adjust the effort. If you are maintaining the same amount of effort, your mind gets restless. Now this is something one might experientially understand. One needs to experientially understand. So once the energy is properly balanced, then there's a possibility of further extending the samadhi, further improving, refining the concentration, unless effort is not controlled like that or reduced like that, the concentration may not arise. So the concentration and the energy are somewhat appear like interconnected, and if you reduce energy too much, then you might even fall asleep. Now therefore, the proper amount of energy is something that you need to practically understand. Similarly, if there is too much concentration and if it overwhelms the whole practice, then mindfulness would not be in the supervision. You may get into a higher concentrated state once you sit, within couple of seconds, within couple of minutes, and you may be in a kind of a strong samadhi. But that is not the situation that we are aiming for. So everything has to be balanced, not that samadhi overwhelm or samadhi overpower the whole situation. So if we are giving too much emphasis to samadhi, then ultimately what happens is, so we are expecting mind to get concentrated once we sit, and we consider that as the success of our practice. So this is something that most people go wrong, because when, as beginners, when our mind is so much restless, distracted, so we have the aim of achieving samadhi. So once samadhi is available, we think so that is the goal. I mean, I was in a really puzzled, really restless state, but now it is concentrated, it is so blissful, so nice, wonderful. So that would be the ultimate goal. So we are very much like samadhi driven. But once some amount of samadhi is available, then actually we need to start developing wisdom, practical wisdom. So that actually requires only a necessary amount of concentration, not overwhelming amount of concentration. And when someone achieve this balance, then Buddha mentioned, now only you can properly recognize the meditation object. So whatever you are mindful, whichever you are now focused, so that has to be properly investigated now. So that investigation will provide the proper results or proper information, how it behaves the way truly as it is. So then only you may get on to the level of wisdom. So wisdom also has to be balanced with the faith. If you don't have faith, then the path is fairly dry, and sometimes you find fault with yourself, find fault with others, and cannot be with the others, cannot tolerate situations, because the lubricant of the saddha is lacking. So therefore, the saddha and the, what you call, the wisdom are to be balanced. Now, after Buddha admonished Venerable Sona, so then Buddha left, and after he left, Sona started practicing properly, and now he is not putting too much energy but only the necessary amount of energy, and he concerned about this equilibrium, balancing of the faculties, and now he continues his practice, and with less time, no time, actually he was able to attain arahantship. Now, after attaining arahantship, so Venerable Sona thought, let me go to the Blessed One and declare final knowledge in his presence. Now, this is in a way kind of a gratitude-based activity, because once he became an arahant, because he now understood, I mean, what was a mess I was in. He was trying diligently but unsuccessful, utter failure, and he wanted to disrobe. And then Buddha came and advised, and now he was successful. Now you can Imagine how even an arahant, a foremost arahant in this sasana, has had that kind of a doubtful situation, because he was not confident enough, or he was not aware of this balancing of effort, and he is putting a lot of effort to his practice, but ultimately not achieving the necessary results, and he was thinking of disrobing. Now, these kind of things can happen to anyone, because sometimes we are too much effortful, sometimes we are lack of effort, and sometimes we are too much faithful, and sometimes we are forgetting about the faith, we are only trying to develop wisdom. So it's a kind of a path that we need to carefully manage, because otherwise we don't know at which point that we may lean on to a particular side. So that is why the mindfulness is quite important, where mindfulness will show us, okay, which part is lacking, which part is weaker, and which part is excessive. So keeping mindfulness in the forefront is extremely important. Mindfulness is the one fully aware of the whole situation. So time to time we need to reflect about the state of the mind. Accordingly, you have to adjust whatever the items, whatever the faculties are to be adjusted. Now you need to attend depending on the information that we are getting through mindfulness. Now, after Venerable Sona approached Buddha, he actually, without immediately telling that I am an arahant now, he actually very beautifully explained how an arahant would behave in a different manner. So this is very interesting. So nekamma adhimutto paviveka adhimutto abhyapajya adhimutto tanhakya adhimutto upadanakya adhimutto asammoha adhimutto. Now these are very interesting areas, actually how he is presenting himself as an arahant. Actually, Buddha may know that he has done the job, but how he is putting it very factual manner is very interesting. Rather than he immediately telling, now I am an arahant, he is explaining certain qualities of an arahant. And what are the qualities? Nekkammadi mutto. Now he is telling, kevalam saddha mattakam noona ayas ayang ayasma nissaya nekkamma adhimutto nakopanetam bhante evang dattamba. Now, when a particular monk is associating a forest, when a particular monk is following, say, some strict rules, and say a particular person, say even a lay person, not attending parties or not attending other typical worldly activities, so he or she is trying to have a kind of a renunciative attitude. So someone might think that he or she is doing it out of faith, because based on faith, one can do that. Say when someone is living in a monastery, so he has a lot of faith on his teacher. So out of faith, he can also maintain a fair amount of renunciative thoughts. So giving up all the luxurious items and giving up all other parties and all those socializing activities, and fairly concerned about the renunciation. Adhere to the rules. And even layperson may have a good faith on a particular teacher. As a result of that, he is abandoning all sorts of other activities and trying to adhere to a particular lifestyle, which is more like a monk's life. So that those are possible, and those are some people are doing even. Now, an outsider, when looking this situation, may interpret it thinking that he is doing it out of faith. So many people are doing it out of faith. And here, Venerable Sona mentioned, if we are considering an arahant, we can't come to such kind of a conclusion. An arahant is not continuing his renunciative life out of faith. But he has a more sublime kind of a quality. That's why he is maintaining that renunciative life. So that is actually Buddha, this Venerable Sona mentioned, Kaya ragasya vita ragatta nekkham madhimutto hoti. Kaya dosasya vita dosatta nekkham madhimutto hoti. Kaya mohasya vita mohatta nekkham madhimutto hoti. Kaya ragasya vita ragatta. Now he has completely uprooted raga, lassen. As a result of that, his mind is naturally bent towards nekkham. Naturally, his mind is inclined towards nekkham, enunciation. Now, he doesn't need to forcefully do anything or just hanging on someone or a particular ritual or particular custom for the renunciation or for the side of renunciation. Rather, since his mind is completely rid of lust, completely free from hatred, completely free from delusion, his mind automatically inclined, determined towards renunciation. So that is why very interesting, sometimes certain monks, before they attain, so they even disrobe. And then again sometimes they come back and come to the sasana. They again become a monk. So there is a very interesting story called Hattisariputta Sutta, where one venerable called Hattisariputta, so he disrobed 6 times again and again, but ultimately he again come back and then he become an arahant, and now he is not going to disrobe. Now the monks were asking, are you not disrobing this time? Then he said, I am not interested of the lay life now. So that's very interesting. I mean, how our minds are working in a way. So still not satisfied in the monk's life, now they are thinking of disrobing. But after disrobe, again not satisfied in lay life, again coming and becoming a monk. And ultimately, once they are confirmed, once the raga dosa moha completely uprooted, now it's automatically no point of going to lay life. He is there now adhering to the monk's life, because lust, hatred and delusion is completely uprooted. So it becomes a kind of a natural behavior then. Now, so Venerable Sona explained this to Buddha, telling that if a particular venerable is thinking that this so-called monk, so-called arahant is being in the sasana, being spending or continuing his monk's life out of faith, it can't be so. It is not, has to be known like that. Rather, he is spending a renunciative life because he is completely free from hatred, completely free from lust, completely free from delusion. And the next point he is mentioning, Labha sakkara silokang nuna ayang ayasma nikamaya mano paviveka dimuttoti nakopanetam bhante evang tattabba. Now you know certain monks, so they can lead a kind of a paviveka, kind of a seclusion, and aiming for seclusion, thinking of having fame and gain. Now after becoming a monk, someone can get famous. So people start knowing him and people start venerating him and coming and expecting his blessings, and putting on the pedestal and venerating, and all sorts of such fame gain starts to happen. If he's a little known monk, maybe a good preacher, so he's started to be known by many others. And even today it is so popular. Now one may spend time in the television, maybe broadcasting many Dhamma sermons over the radio. Or may nowadays people start putting a YouTube channel. So many possibilities are there for one to become popular. Now, in order to further popularize, one can even use a forest. So he interpret himself as a forest monk, just to get gain, just to become more famous. So that is possible. Now, when one is living in the forest, therefore another monk may interpret that thinking or telling this particular monk is living in the forest expecting such kind of a gain and fame. Could it be this venerable one is intent upon solitude because he is hankering after gain, honor and praise? Because people like monks to be in the forest. People really praise such kind of a diligent practice. And people really like that monks living in such a secluded life. So thinking that as a way of getting praised, one can live like that. Now, Venerable Sona mentioned here, now if the person is really an arahant, so that is not the intention. He still maintain that secluded life. He may continue the secluded life, but not aiming any gain, fame or praise. He is living such kind of a solitude life because he is completely free from lobha, dosa, moha, lust, hatred and delusion. Because when lust, hatred and delusion is completely free, uprooted, so his mind is automatically in the seclusion. He prefers seclusion. So that becomes his inherent quality. Not that he is aiming any gain, fame, etc. But his mind is automatically like to be in the seclusion. Dwell in seclusion. So Venerable Sona explained this also to the Buddha. Now the third one. Silabbata paramasang nuna ayang ayasma sarato paccha gacchanto abhyapajjadi muttoti nokopanetam bhante evang dattappa. Now, one is living a harmless life. Is it because he is adhering to Vinay rules? Now, you know, as lay people, so you are giving a precept, Panatipata, Veramani, Sikkhapadan, Samadhyami. Now I am abstaining from killing animals, living beings. And you can little expand it, not harming anyone. Now is it merely because of that rule, are you maintaining such kind of a life? You are maintaining a very harmless, non-afflictive life. Is it just because of that rule? And against the society, so there are so many rules and regulations. So if you kill an animal, there is no much matter. But if you kill a man, then definitely you will be in big trouble. So are you refraining from killing? Is it due to this law? A country has many laws. So is it just because of that are you refraining from killing? And again, as monks, we have many rules. So we can't kill a man, we can't kill animals. So is it merely because of these rules that are we abiding by such kind of a harmless life? So when someone is maintaining such life, kind of a harmless life, so another person can interpret telling that, okay, this particular person is living like that because there's a rule. Either established by the society or either established by the monastic court. So that is why he is maintaining a harmless life. If there is no such, rule, then he would be a different person. But since there is a rule established, that is why this person is behaving like a harmless person. So Venerable Sona mentioned, you can't tell like that for an arahant. So arahant is still maintaining a very harmless life, non-afflictive life, because he is completely free from lust, completely free from hatred, completely free from delusion. Now, that is also interesting. So that means harmlessness or innocence become one of the inherent characteristics of a person when he is completely free from lust, hatred and delusion. Now, we are getting into some kind of argument. We are getting into some kind of a quarrel. We are getting into some trouble, conflict with others. Because lust, hatred, delusion are available. So they are promoting various other defilements. Sort of agitation, restlessness, frustration, resentment, anger, and all sorts of defilements are promoted, and ultimately we can't maintain an innocent life. We can't maintain a harmless life. We get into a lot of conflict with others. But if the roots are not available, lust, hatred, delusion, those roots, unwholesome roots are completely removed, then his mind is completely become harmless, innocent. So then his way of life is completely a harmless life. It is not even necessary to have any societal law, any law regulation established by the society, even if there is no such law. Even if there is no such monastic code, still this particular monk will live a very harmless life. Now, monastic code, many rules, Vinaya rules are needed, are required. And again, rules and regulations in the society are required because people are prone to this kind of conflicts. People are prone to quarrel, arguments, because internally they are burning. Internally, a lot of frustration is available. And this burning happens because of lust, hatred and delusion. But when an arahant is considered, so he is maintaining a different situation. Now all the roots are not available. As a result of that, so his way of life is completely free from any kind of a argument, or we can say any kind of a quarrel, any kind of a conflict with another person. And he is maintaining a very harmless life. Now, after telling that Venerable Sona, and actually the last three items are directly mentioned, his tanhakhyadimutto, upadanakhyadimutto, and asammohadimutto. Now, this, unlike the previous three, actually I also have a little doubt here, why there is no kind of a counterpart is not mentioned here. Countermeasure is not mentioned here. So, immediately mention khaya ragasya vita ragatta tanhakkayadimutto hoti. Now, in this particular arahant, now there is no lust. He has completely removed lust. Now, he still maintained tanhakkayadimutto. So, still maintain a life intent upon destruction of craving. So, I have a little doubt why still an intention is necessary, because he has completely free from lust, craving right now. Because if the task is done, so why still have such kind of an intention? But anyway, according to the sutta, that is what it is mentioned. Khaya ragasa vitaragatta tanhakyadimutto hoti. Now, he has become vitaraga, free from lust. So his mind is inclined towards this uprooting of craving, destruction of craving. And then similarly, Venerable Sona mentioned, intent upon destruction of clinging. Now you know, typically our minds get clung into various things. When we see beautiful things, we get clung. If we hear something pleasant, probably we start enjoying it, clinging to it, attaching to it. So that is possible. And when there is a pleasant odor, that is also something we like to acquire. If there is a very tasty food, then we want to have more. So all these different sensations actually provide or promote desire in ourselves. And again, that is possible, promoted further, then mind get kind of clung to that, mind get grasping that. Then the bhava happens, the existence happens. So you are continuing this ongoing process again and again, becoming someone, completely losing the present moment, completely bewildered by that kind of a situation. So we are very much like incident driven, situation driven. We lose the present moment completely, and we are born to new state again and again. But when one is practicing, so one is trying to minimize that grasping, so that one remain in the present. So one remain in the present in a peaceful manner, no need to go for any burdened, grasping state, rather spending a very pleasant, simple type of mindset. It is not burdened with grasping. So one may slowly understand that freedom. At the beginning, there are so much of different grasping, different clinging into many, many things. But slowly, as a result of the practice, one may understand how to maintain a life free from clinging, free from grasping. Now, so that attitude, upadana khyadi muttu, now one has that attitude, now somehow I need to remove this upadana. So mind has that tendency. Mind has a kind of a tendency to always cling into something, always to grasp something. How can I remove that tendency? Always mind is trying to grasp something. How can I remove that tendency? Upadana khyadi muttu. All the upadana, all the different kinds of clinging has to be faded away. So that is his wish. So that wish he is now trying to accomplish. And once he become an arahant, so it is completed. So it is mentioned upadana khyadi muttu because his mind is now free from hatred, free from lust, free from delusion. He also, I have little doubt why, if once it is accomplished, why he is still maintaining that kind of a attitude. Because if you can remember when we were discussing Kajjaniya Sutta, there Buddha mentioned very beautifully he was continuing abandoning things, and once he become an arahant, now he is not gaining, not abandoning, because now he has completed abandonment. Something like that, that's very beautifully explained in the Kajjaniya Sutta by the Buddha. So at the beginning, he is interested of letting go, because the grasping happens. Once he become an arahant, so that letting go process has completed now, successful. Now he is not interested in letting go even, because it is done. But anyway, here in this Sona Sutta it is mentioned he is intent upon the destruction of clinging because he is devoid of lust, through the destruction of lust. This little contradicting as far as I understand, but anyway, Sutta is going like that. And the sixth one, he is intent upon non-confusion because he is devoid of lust through the destruction of lust. Now, confusion happens because of the moha, because of the delusion. So kind of a doubt happens in the mind, perplexity happens in the mind, and confusion happens in the mind. Now all these are heavily because of the moha. So you can't get a proper decision. You are not sure about the proper solution. So mind gets confused. You don't know what is really going on. You don't know the exact practice to follow. You don't know the proper practice. So likewise, there may be various reasons for you to get confused. And when one become an arahant, there is no such confusion at all. So the root of confusion has completely removed. So that is the moha, delusion. So delusion has completely uprooted. So here the statement is mentioning asam moha dimutto. So assume that for the easy clarification, we can say, so we have to maintain an attitude of asam moha dimuttu, an attitude of non-confusion, intent upon non-confusion. Has to have an attitude that somehow to maintain the mind free from any confusion. Mind has to be simple. Mind has to be clear. Mind has to be very much like transparent. So you can see what's really going on. You are not deluded. Mind has that transparency. It is not that you are confused with so many matters related to the past, so many things going to do in the future, and now also you are deluded by so many things that you are enjoying. So then the mind is kind of cluttered, confused, burdened. But as the practice is continuing, so your mind start cleansing, and fair amount of clarity of mind going to be arised. So now you can see through things. You can see even the defilements arising in the mind. So that is a good thing. I mean, defilements are still there, but you know, you are not deluded by that. Defilements are coming and going, but you are maintaining your integrity. You are maintaining the sort of stable mindset. So that is where the non-confusion is available. So always, therefore, one has to have kind of an intent towards that, kind of an inclination that I should maintain my mind in non-confusion. Because some days, sometimes we may understand, okay, I am now things are messed up. Okay, I can't get up early today, so I can't do my daily practice today. Okay, I missed the bus today, I missed the train today. So I forgot my whatever the necessary thing today. So things are getting messed up on certain days. So these are kind of regular experiences sometimes time we can have. So on those days, we feel confused. Things are not in order. And we can't answer a particular question properly. We can't think about the proper solution. Because mind is somewhat deluded. But the intention has to be there to maintain a non-deluded mind. Non-confusion. So in the statement here, Venerable Sona mentioned, Kaya ragasya vita ragatta asammohadimutto hoti. Since this Arahant's mind is completely free from lust, now he is free from confusion. Since his mind is completely free from hatred, his mind is free from confusion. Since his mind is completely free from what you call the moha, delusion, his mind is completely free from confusion. It's very much like, I mean, interpreting the state of the mind of an Arahant from different angles. Now, after telling all these six, now we are coming to a very interesting area, how he further explains an Arahant mind. Now this is very, very interesting part. Evam samma vimutta chittasa bhante bhikkhuno busachepi chakku vinyaya rupa chakkusa apatam agacchanti. Nevasa chittam pariyadiyanti amissikata mevasa chittam hoti thitam anejjappattam vayanchassanu passati. Now this is exactly has to happen even when one become an arahant, but when in one's mind is fairly in the vipassana practice. Now we can't, I mean, arahant is endowed by this. So his mind has to be in 100% every time, every day has to be like this. But on the other hand, if we consider vipassana practitioner, he time to time may experience this kind of a situation. Now, what is the situation? He very beautifully explained by Venerable Sona. Evan samma vimutta chittasa bhante. Now he is referring to arahant, a particular bhikkhu who is perfectly liberated in his mind. Busa chepi chakku vinyaya rupa. Now so many powerful visible forms are encountered by his mind. Sorry, encountered by his eye. Now you can see he is not simply talking about the kind of a situation where one is always closing his eyes and maintaining a very secluded life, not engaged with so many anything. But he is talking that his eyes may encounter so much of things. Very powerful forms cognizable by the eye. Busa chepi chakku vinyaya rupa. The term busa means very powerful, very strong sights. So typically if you see that, a normal person see that, a worldling see that, he get overwhelmed by that. Suppose while you are walking on the street, see there are various very attractive sights available. So a normal person get immediately attracted there, start delighting with it, thinking about it, taking a photo, and thinking more and more about it, what he has seen. So this is where the mind get bewildered. the same situation. That means an arahant is going through, so all this information is coming to his eyes as well, but not to the mind. Nevasa chittam pariyadiyanti. Now, even though eye has seen all these troublesome, very powerful kind of forms, his mind remains calm in that sense. Do not obsess his mind. He is not going to proliferation. Now, obsess happens only when one starts proliferation. He starts thinking, starts thinking from the past, thinking in the future, imagining rumination, and ultimately get obsessed. Now, if an arahant is considered, so there is no such kind of an obsession going on, even though he see such kind of a powerful sight. Amissikata mevasa chittang hoti. Now the chitta, the mind is remain unmixed, not at all affected. Mind was maintaining its integrity. Even though I have seen many distractive things, but the mind remains unaffected. And titang, mind is maintaining its steadiness, stillness. Mind is unwavering. Titang, aninjappattang. So mind is imperturbable, like a rock. Even though the strong wind is coming, the rock is quite stable. So actually Venerable Sona give that simile later. Vayanchassa anupassati. And he can see that the whatever the forms passing away. Now he is not picking any of those. He is not being overwhelmed by what he has seen. Instead he can see what he has seen is slowly passing away, quickly passing away. Now this is a very interesting way of interpreting the the operation of an arahant mind, where his mind remain calm, remain without obsession and not affected, steady, imperturbable, and whatever the object encountered, he see that it is passing away. And Venerable Sona repeat it to the other faculties as well. That means to the ear faculty, nose faculty, tongue faculty, body faculty, and the mind faculty. Now, even when one is being blamed, now it has happened many times. Now, Buddha sometimes go on Pindapatha, so some person start blaming. Certain monks start going on village Pindapatha, so people start blaming. And sometimes even they are being praised by the kings, by the merchants. So the praise also sometimes overwhelming. But when the arahants are considered, when praise happens, when blame happens, still they remain, their minds remain calm, quiet, still, steady, not mixed with all this what is being heard. And they see that what is heard is fading away. Similarly, there may be pleasant odors or unpleasant odors. When they encounter that, still they are able to maintain that integrity. And similarly, probably they may get some delicious food. If another person receives that, probably he may go through kind of a pretty greedy kind of an attitude. But if a monk, an arahant is received it, if it is a really delicious food, still his mind remain calm. His mind is not overpowered by the greed. His mind is unmixed, steady, still, quiet. And he see these, whatever the taste, passing away. And there are various sensations happen in the body, and those also come and go. And if those are quite pleasant sensations, if those are not kind of unpleasant sensations, still the mind of the arahant remains steady. And now actually Venerable Sona give the simile Suppose, Bhante, there was a stone mountain without clefts or fissures, one solid mass. And if a violent rainstorm should come from east, it could not make it quake, wobble and tremble. If a violent rainstorm should come from the west, from the north, from the south, it could not make it quake, wobble and tremble. So similarly, Venerable Swami mentioned, if an arahant is concerned, so even the powerful forms cognized by the eye happens, so his mind remains steady. And even when the very powerful sounds happen, his mind remains steady. For the odors, smells, taste, sensations, even the thoughts are the same. Now the same thing is actually interpreted in as a verse, Nekkhammang adhimuttasya pavivekhancha chetasu abhyapajya adhimuttasya upadanakhyasya tanhakya adhimuttasya asammohancha chetasu disva ayatanuppadam samma chittam vimuchyati. Now Buddha, Venerable Sona mentioned, if one is intent on renunciation and solitude of mind, if one is intent on non-affliction and the destruction of clinging, if one is intent on craving's destruction and non-confusion of mind, when one sees the sense bases arising, one's mind is completely liberated. Now actually what we have discussed is fairly summarized in these few verses, so I don't think I need to repeat it again. One important thing here is disva ayatunuppada. Now you are diligent, maintaining an eye of all the faculties, and you might notice that various forms coming and going, various sounds coming and going, various odors coming and going, various states happening, arising and passing away, sensations arising and passing away, thoughts also arising and passing away. Seeing this happens at each sense base, disva ayatanuppadam samma chittam vimuchyati. So the mind get liberated, mind become clean, mind become clear, because mind is not attached to any of those. So those are very much like triggers, but triggers come and go, but the mind remain quiet. Tassa samma vimuttassa santa chittassa bhikkhuno katassa patichayo natthi karaniyang na vijyati. Now Venerable Sona mentioned, so that particular arahant who is having a very peaceful mind, completely liberated, there is nothing more to do, nothing further to be done. Karaniyang na vijyati. So you can't, there is nothing more to increase. He has fulfilled the task. And last verse, Selo yatha eka gano vatena na samirati. Evam rupa rasa sadda gandha passa cha kevala. Ittha dhamma anittha cha nappa vedhanti tadino. Thitan chittang vipamuttang vayan chassanu passati. Now here, Venerable Sona very beautifully mentioned, this verse is very beautiful. Selo yatha eka gano vatena na samirati. Like a solid rock, not stirred by the wind. Similarly, the rupa, various forms, sadda, various sounds, gandha, various odors, passa, various contact, and any of those external sense bases, rupa, sadda, gandha, rasa, pottabba, dhamma, even though they are happen, it could be either ittha dhamma or anitta. That means either they are quite pleasant ones or quite unpleasant ones. You know, when we consider rupa, sadda, gandha, rasa, so those can be either pleasant or sometimes unpleasant. Both extremes can happen. But nappa vedinti tadino. So this particular arahant is maintaining his stability of the mind. Titang. So his mind is still. Chittang vipamuttang. Mind is liberated. He can see how things are passing away. So this is how it is summarized at the end of the sutta. So actually this ends the sutta. So on a sutta is a very beautiful one. So how one has gone through various kind of ups and downs in his life, spiritual life, and ultimately was able to balance the faculties and become an Arahant, and how very beautifully he presents his understanding to the Buddha. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
So if anyone has any questions, you may raise your hand, or you can also submit them via the chat.
Hola. Experience in the stillness of the mind, so very good.
Well, so I guess, Bhante, while we wait, were you able to look into last week? One of the participants had a question about whether we could further discuss whether jhana was necessary for wisdom to arise.
Yeah, actually, what I thought was, Jennifer, to start a series of suttas with respect to that side. So maybe from next time we can start that, because rather than just giving an answer, so there are various suttas Buddha discuss with respect to jhana and samadhi practice, and we can explore those suttas and see what Buddha has discussed, what Buddha has taught. And what other teachers are also talking about it. So like that, we'll start a new series, which is primarily talking about the samadhi.
Okay, well,
Yeah.
thank you, Sanjay.
Yeah. Because it's a kind of a tricky side, so and different people interpret differently. So I mean, while going through some suttas, probably we can get some insight. Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, I'd like to invite Sohani to ask the first question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Avasarai Bhante.
Yeah.
My question is, now we do face lots of situations that require us to, or is expected us to take decisions. Now, for example, I had to face a situation. It was actually a death of a dog in the family. But I knew when the situation was bad, that if there was nothing to be done, and that it'll pass, and just do, just do nothing. However, there is a lot of criticism at those situations from the others to do something. So at that point, now the mind, at the beginning, my mind was fairly still in the sense, I mean, this is life, everything arises and passes. This dog is also going to die in a few hours or whatever. It was quite calm and accepting. However, the criticism again disturbed. So how does, that,
Can be
how
handled,
does
yeah.
one deal with that?
Exactly.
Ask
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting question. Actually, if you can remember when we were discussing, I think I discussed Pañcuddhāvaka Sutta, where Buddha pointed out different kinds of thoughts. Say the very easy categories are the, what you call the sensual thoughts, hate-related thoughts or ill-will thoughts, and thoughts of ill will, or the other one is the what you call this kama vitakka, vyapada vitakka, vihinsa vitakka. That is thoughts of doing some harm. Now these are in a way quite easy to understand, so you can quickly recognize them when it is available. But again, Buddha mentioned about another very subtle kinds of thoughts, where appear like reasonable, appear like rational. As a result of that, we start thinking about it, and ultimately we get confused. Now, one of them is considered as how another person would think about me. What is the perspective he has about me? What is the kind of attitude he may have about me? Kind of an eye-centered thinking. Thinking that how another person would think about me. Now, that happens when someone is criticizing us. When someone is making an argument or someone is giving their opinion. Because they are giving so much of opinions and those may be valid or not valid, but ultimately it gives us a kind of a different manner that it disturbs us thinking, okay, why these people are thinking like that? Why are they interpreting like that? I know I did my best. But they are not happy about it and they are giving their opinion. So that disturbed me because I am expecting kind of an approval from them as well. So I am somewhat dependent on their opinion. So I have done something correct. So I expect an approval from others as well because I did the correct thing. But on the other hand, if we think carefully, so this is here kind of a self-affirmation is something that we are expecting. So we always expect, okay, others to respect me, others to appreciate my decisions, others to agree on my decisions, they have to approve my decisions, they have to approve my way of life, they should have the proper perspective about my way of life, so they should not misunderstand me, they should always have the proper understanding about me. So this is the way of attitude we have typically. So Anavanyatti Patisanyutta Vitakka. So this is the Pali term Buddha referred in that Pasundovaka Sutta. Anavanyatti Patisanyutta Vitakka. So we are expecting or we are thinking a certain thought is appearing in the mind. How another person would think about me. So I think this is the way that we are interpreting whenever we go through this kind of a situation. So why they are thinking like that? Why they are criticizing? Why they are giving those opinions? So these are still I-related, I-centered way of thinking. So on the other hand, what we can say is we don't need to worry about it. We don't need to worry if we know that we did the best thing, we were taking care of it, taking care of the person, whoever, and we did our best. Others may have 1,000 opinions that we can't stop. We can't ask them to all agree with us or to have the same opinion as we have. We can't expect that. We can never expect that. So on the other hand, what we can say is we have to have a kind of a stable mind, even though they are criticizing, even though they are giving various other opinions. If we are honestly done the best, that's it.
It is very subtle, Pante.
Exactly.
I understand. I knew that as well. And there is also this propensity to succumb to their requests.
Exactly.
And then in the rush, in that process, I know I'm creating unnecessary akusal. But then,
So we are getting to confusion. We are getting to more confusion.
Yes.
Yeah. So actually, so we can't always expect others to agree with us, others to approve what we do. So that is the world. I mean, even though we do the 100% correct thing, we get some form of a criticism. That is the way. And I mean, when you are doing something only, you are getting also. If you are maintaining a very kind of a passive life, you won't get it even. But when you are actively doing some activity, I mean, you are going through some incidents, then definitely there are various criticisms, praise are going on. And if we relate this to today's sutta, so this is the kind of worldly way of happening things. And are we capable of maintaining our mind undisturbed? So this is some kind of a skill that we need to develop. So if we get a little disturbed, if we still feel panic, feel kind of threatened. So that means, so whatever we heard has penetrated in. It has disturbed the mind. Now, if the arahant is considered, So he never get disturbed like that. He never get stressed like that. So this is something that we can relate with our situation and how an arahant would behave. So in that way, we can have a kind of a direction towards the practice. So more my practice improve, I have to have a kind of a stable mind. Among all these difficulties, I have to have kind of a stable mind.
Another point that came to mind is, so we may actually in action do something that is required by like to maintain peace or whatever or outwardly, but the mind is active, so our mind understands it's all arising and passing, and that's it, and finish it then and there.
Yeah, actually that is the place we are well attuned with the practice. Now, we can't achieve it every time, but when the mind is fairly equipped with wisdom, so it is well attuned with the Vipassana practice, Vipassana knowledge is properly available in the mind, so then actually mind can handle it. It is not taking that into the mind, so mind remains quiet. Mind is not disturbed. So time to time we may encounter that kind of a very stable state of mind. So that indicates, okay, this is the state I need to continue, I need to have, I need to improve, sustain.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Are there certain situations, circumstances, or conditions where it would make more sense for us to focus on a particular foundation of mindfulness versus just being aware of whatever comes to mind?
I didn't really get to your question, Jennifer.
Yeah, so my question is, four foundations of mindfulness, we can be aware of the body, feeling, mind, and dhamma, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when or in what situations is it more appropriate for us to focus on just one particular foundation of mindfulness versus just being aware and whatever comes to the mind, whether it be any of the four, that we are aware of kind of everything. I guess it's just something in my practice where, generally speaking, I'm just practicing awareness overall, although the mind naturally does, start with focusing on the body and then eventually moving to more subtle things like the mind and other foundations of mindfulness. But when does it actually make sense for us to maybe further develop and hone in on one particular foundation?
Yeah, actually now another interesting point is here. Now when you develop either any of these foundations of mindfulness, ultimately what you are going to experience is non-clinging. So that is the aim. That is the aim of the practice, to touch this non-clinging state of mind. Just to expose to this non-clinging nature of the mind. Now mind is not associating anything. Now mind is not clinging on to anything. So anisita anupadana. And once you have that, it doesn't matter whether you came through that through Kaya Anupassana, you achieve that through Vedana Anupassana, you achieve that through Chitta Anupassana or Dhamma Anupassana. Ultimately, where you reach is the mind which is free from clinging. And then that has to be kind of developed, that has to be cultivated, that has to be maintained as much as possible. So that has to be your attitude in a way. And while you are doing that, suppose your mind get attached to something related to the body. Now probably you can do Kayanupassana again a little bit in order to expose, in order to realize the passing away nature of whatever the phenomena. That is one option. Or else you can simply do the Chittanupassana to recognize the clinging nature of the mind, because it may be bodily phenomena, but what is attached is your mind. So probably you can reflect about the mind to understand that clinging nature. Then the clinging may reduce and fade away and ultimately again become free. So therefore, we can't give a kind of a strict answer here. It depends on what is happening quite quickly. Now, if you consider this Indriya Bhavana Sutta, so Buddha mentioned, say, you have seen something and through that you understood, okay, mind has come to kind of an agitated state. Yeah, somehow quickly you recover. You don't need to go through a kind of a prescription, okay, this is the way I need to do it, this is the exact way I need to do it. But rather, once you are familiar with so many different techniques, whatever the technique you can use. So more you are familiarized with all the four foundations of mindfulness, you are feel free to use any of these. There is no any particular order mentioned. Whatever working out, you can use. Yeah, actually, I mean, if we are not familiar with a particular one, now say mindfulness, now actually sometimes we don't need even to go to Kayanupassana and Vedanupassana if we can handle the thing through the mind. Because you know, when we are coming to the state of non-grasping, and if we are trying to maintain that state for a long time, then I mean, there's a tendency that we are more and more dealing with the mind. So we may get into the clinging state because of a feeling. And it doesn't mean that we always have to look at that feeling and recover. Rather, you can recognize how mind has clung into that feeling and how mind can be released. Therefore, I also don't think that we have to master Vedanupassana every time in order to release the mind. If you can look at the mind and you can understand the burdening nature, kind of confused nature, attached nature of the mind, and you are now aware of that, and you are not promoting that, you are not promoting any thoughts related to that, now slowly again the mind gets released. So there is no a particular reason available that you need to only look at the feeling and sort of release that.
Quite clear, the focus and intent is trying to get to the non-clinging as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'd like to invite you to the next question.
Okay, Naipante. I was thinking about the question and answer regarding about the dog. And I'm just thinking, should one look at your mind at that stage and see why one reacted, or why one reacts to praise or to criticism? Is it because this as being me, this I am, this is myself? So this, I thought, my troubled opportunity to take consciousness that.
Okay.
to have the unshakable, invertible mind. And tell yourself that all these opportunities, this I'm not, this is not myself. And then find out why am I reacting. I'm reacting because I've taken this as myself.
Yeah, we definitely can train like that, because we don't need to identify these things as mine or myself. So these, ultimately what is heard is nothing but sounds, and the thoughts are also just merely thoughts. So likewise, we can start kind of a disclaiming type of process without trying to consider these things as so solid, substantial things. We can simply use our understanding to disclaim these things. So no problem. Many approaches may be available, many methods may be available to overcome that confusion. Disclaiming like that, thinking that they are not me, not mine, myself, no problem.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jennifer. Actually, it is a follow-up of Jennifer's question to you. Just wanted to make a comment and see what you have to say about it. Now, when we do the Goenka method, it is purely focused on sensations and nothing else, absolutely that alone, nothing else. So when you get, good at it, so that is using one type and not any of the others, right? So isn't that what you were just saying, Dante? That you can use one of the methods and work on that?
Yeah, actually I want to tell that not only this method available, but many methods are available. Looking at
the
available, as you said, on certain methods, so they are emphasizing on a particular method. But as we know, Buddha has mentioned four satipatthana, four foundations of mindfulness. So therefore, we can use any of those. Either we can look at the body, either we can look at feelings, or directly we can look at what's going on in the mind, various states of the mind, and maybe how thoughts arising in the mind, and how certain hindrances are available in the mind, or even say, as we even discussed today, how all these things are happening at the sense basis. Now say, for example, when we hear something, so it happens at the ear base. So rather than looking at the mind, probably you can keep your attention at the ear base and see how the sound arising and passing away, and how the knowing, the triggering part at the ear arising and passing away. So that likewise, many methods are available. We don't need to stick to something or only use one particular method. If you are familiar with that and you are quite conversant about it, no harm in using that either. But many methods are available.
But then I started off with it, but since I've got accustomed to it and know the Dhamma much more, when I just started going to I didn't know any of this. Mm-hmm. Now I do all four.
Yeah.
I started with that. So even when I meditate, I feel the sensations.
Yeah.
I don't do the Goenka, standing, but even if I do Anapana, the sensations come.
Yes.
So is that okay?
Definitely, no problem. Sensations are available every time. So either you are giving the emphasis to these sensations, or either we are giving to the emphasis to the knowing mind, or different defilements available in the mind, So it depends on our practice. So I mean, we don't need to stick to a particular area when four are available. Yeah.
But then also another, the sensations.
Yeah.
In the tradition, the sensations come very strongly. But when I do Dhanapana also, the sensations come. Now, is that this, the Pritistuka sort of thing, or what is the difference?
Now, can you repeat the last statement?
Is that because of the Pritistuka of meditation?
Yeah. That's also possible. Because, Anapanasati produce Piti Sukha and actually that is Piti Sukha belong to Vedanupassana. So, can you remember the Anapanasati Sutta? So, Buddha explained,
yes.
16 steps,
yes.
four steps belong to Kayanupassana, four steps belong to Vedanupassana. So, the Piti Sukha actually belong to Vedanupassana.
So, are you saying that when I'm in that kind of a stage that I'm in the first jhana there?
Actually, it depends. Actually, the point is, say you are maintaining your attention on breath, and again you are sustaining your attention, and you are experiencing piti and sukha, and mind is also become one-pointed, and you are fully aware of this state. We can interpret it as a jhana, no problem. But on the other hand, certain teachers doesn't agree because they want to get absorbed. Now say you are practicing Anapanasati, but still assume that you are not experiencing the nimitta. The kind of a nimitta arising with Anapanasati Samatha practice. And some teachers actually want you to have that nimitta and absorb to that nimitta. Then only they consider it as a jhana. So these are different levels of concentration, we can say. At the beginning also you are experiencing jhana factors to some extent. But on the other hand...
On the other hand,
certain others are emphasizing, you need to have a very extreme, deep type of samadhi. You can only have that using that nimitta. You need to get absorbed to that. So that is how another school of thought is interpreting that.
But the Piti Sukha is very intense.
Mm-mm.
So I don't know.
Now one rule of thumb available in the Vipassana practice is for you to look at what is more intense, look at what is more prominent. Now at this point, if you feel that this Piti Sukha is more prominent, now best thing is to look at it. I mean, you can step back and look at it objectively, then you can learn how this Piti Sukha also coming and going, arising and passing away. So you can start Vipassana practice using the Piti Sukha.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Bhante. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante, for you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Bhante, now, you spoke about the four foundations of mindfulness. So ultimately, Bhante, we try to come to that stage where we are just in a stage where we are watching the mind, which is unperturbed. Is that right today?
Can you repeat?
Once we go through the stages of the four foundations of mindfulness,
yes.
Our ultimate goal is to look at this mind which has now settled and is not clinging to anything or enjoying anything or anything like that, but it is just a peaceful, calm mind.
Exactly.
That's what we are
aiming for. Exactly. That's what I also emphasize. So irrespective of whichever the method you are using, our objective is to maintain a non-clinging mind. Anisitocha viharate nachakinchitoke upadhyati. Say, sometimes Buddha mentioned anisthito anupadano sato bhikkhu parippaji. Without getting associated with anything, without clinging on to anything, mindfully the monk is living his life. So this is the kind of objective we have to have. So the tools we are using are maybe kaya anupassana, vedana anupassana, citta anupassana, dhamma anupassana, but they are merely tools.
Yes.
They are merely tools.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, there's a very interesting way that Venerable Katukurunde Jnanananda Bhante interpreted. So he used kaya anupassana, vedana anupassana, citta anupassana, dhamma anupassana as a simile of scaffolding. You know, when we are constructing a building, when we are constructing a building, we are using scaffolding to construct it, because yet the building is not completed. But when the building is completed, what are you going to do?
Enjoy the building and live, stay in the building.
Exactly. Are you going to stay on the scaffolding?
No.
So that is what he is telling. So this scaffolding are very much like the satipatthana. So they are necessary. They are extremely necessary to build the building. And once the building is finished, you need to live in the building, not on the scaffolding. The building, the building is where anisthita anupada. So the mind free from clinging, free from attachment. So that is the building. Now we need to live there.
That temporary release mind
is something that we need to cultivate. We need to make it abundant.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Sometimes, occasionally, it does come when, especially when you go to retreats and all and come back, that even when we are just sitting down, that state comes in briefly and goes.
That
is when we have done a lot of meditation, but when we don't, it doesn't come.
Yeah, maybe. That is how.
So Bhante continue.
Yeah, so actually, that is how. I mean, when we are into practice, so they start coming because we are more preparing the conducive courses in the retreat environment.
Yes.
But once we come back home, probably we are not having that opportunity, so we are quickly losing it. But slowly, as we continue our practice, even at home we start maintaining that, experiencing that. So likewise, the practice is growing.
Mm-hmm. And the other one comment I wanted to get, lay people must say, okay, the lady spoke about the family dog and in a way, it's a family, it's like a child, a family dog, it's a child, huh? So we have to, we can't only put up big ideas because it belongs, the other the members also like to give their view.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have to balance the family life, but they are not living in a monastery. Sometimes, you know, in this country, they talk of euthanasia and all that, and they people don't like to see that their dogs suffering. So that euthanasia is suggested by the vet party, and why should they allow a dog to suffer?
Mm-hmm. I mean, these are.
I like your opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say, giving. I mean. approving euthanasia, I mean, it depends on your attitude towards that. Because now the thing is, there is a fair amount of karma also going on. Now say, if there is huge amount of karma accumulated and at our death moment, say if we have to suffer, and if can we implement euthanasia to get rid of that karma?
But I hear what you're saying, but you know, to see like the family dog suffering a lot, it's been hard for everybody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
When they can go peacefully and leave, because they have a terrible tumor or something, they're suffering on their head, whatever, we don't know, I mean, I'm just taking an example.
Yeah.
Or some terrible, painful thing, then isn't it peaceful for them to go? With a nice little injection to put them to sleep.
How about if the after the death, if it is going to a more difficult state, how you know that he may be getting into a more peaceful state after death?
But Bhante, you know, when the especially animals have, you know, they with the suffering, they must be having a lot of distress.
True. I know. Now,
I pass away, different, but
yeah.
There is a lot of distress.
Yeah.
Distress will automatically form back
and
because
you're
in a state of distress.
Sure. I fully understand what you are telling, but the kind of someone can argue. Now suppose, forget about the dog. Now suppose there's a loved one.
Mm.
And there's a loved one, he or she is going through utter suffering. And now you as a family member, you are trying to implement euthanasia. Now, how you know very well, after death, this person is going to have a blissful life or have a kind of a peaceful life after death? What is the kind of assurance we have? That's the thing.
No, we don't know.
That's the point.
We don't know that thing.
That's why, I mean, so regarding...
We are in a lot of
pain. That's what I want to tell you.
Pain and struggling, they might end up in the worst place.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that right?
No, that's the thing. So regarding euthanasia, different people can have different attitude, different opinions. Because one thing is we can't tolerate that. We can't see that our loved one is suffering. So we don't have that much of, patience, tolerance to see that another person is suffering, because we are overwhelmed by the compassion or something like that. On the other hand, we don't know exactly what would be his next birth. And say, as a human being, that's the thing. As a human being, assume that we know the amount of suffering we have, but if the person is supposed to be reborn in the hell realm, so the suffering available at the hell realm is more and more intense than the suffering we have in the utter form, even in the human realm. So therefore, even though we are trying to give euthanasia, isn't it allowing that passing away person to have that intense suffering after the death very early than he is supposed to have it? So one can interpret, one can argue like that. So therefore, I mean, regarding euthanasia, there are different ways that one can interpret. So it's true that I am quite considering, I am a little disturbed why my loved one is suffering, so I want to have him a peaceful death. But we only see the dislife. We only see a very narrow area of the picture. We don't know the big picture.
No, we can never know about it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But of course, now in this country, euthanasia is legal, and you can choose to have euthanasia, in this part of the world, so I think they have a terrible disease. They can sign up for that, you know, it's nothing to do with their loved one.
Yeah. So that's the thing. If it is the will of the person, then no problem. As far as we can say, so it happens from the will of the person, but not because of the will of the relatives. Or it's very difficult. I mean, these are some controversial points. So where we can look at the problem in many different angles.
Of course.
So that's what I want. I also can simply tell. Okay, I am agree. Okay, you just implement euthanasia. But rather than telling them, so we can look at the problem in many different angles and analyze, because these different possibilities are available.
Yes, of course, Mandu.
Yeah.
But when it comes to family things, what I was trying to make a point is that we have to balance our life, Bato, because it's a family thing.
Yeah.
So whether we may want something because we take it to sister, but others are not as guilty to the that aspect, so they may want other things. So we have to balance everything in one thing.
Sure.
And then that is a big factor also in one thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is not limited to lay life. I am experiencing huge rain today. So that's why I'm struggling to go through the situation. So by the way, I fully agree with your argument, and it is not only related to the lay life, it is common to, the monk's life as well. I mean, it is common to all human beings. So we always have different situations, difficult situations. We have to balance and we have to look at all the possibilities. And we can't say we only have a single solution. There may be many solutions available. Yeah.
Yes, we have to see, look at everybody's, we have to balance it and then, do it peacefully and calmly, whatever we are doing. Because we can't speak only our views. Because we are meeting to the Buddhism, that's what I'm trying to say, Bhante.
Yes, definitely.
Because by the Lokwandu of the state, people go to the retreat and then we go home and then we are being critical, saying others are not doing the way they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So he used to say not to mind our own business. Because of that, we just look after our beliefs and our way of life. But we have to balance the family life one day.
Sure. That's why, it's always have the opportunity cost.
Yes, Mante. So that's how it is, it's very difficult. Because we have a community living, Mante, the lay life.
Yeah, even in the monk's life, we have the community. We are living today at Nisarnane, about 40 monks are there. And more than you, we are in the community.
Yes, I know, Mante. We only have the family. We all have a very large
community.
Family.
Exactly.
Mante, thank you.
Did you have another follow-up question?
Yes, please. Following up from what this lady was saying, because of the family, we have to look at everybody, what their opinions are, their needs are, and then their position. And I felt that would be very hard to do, because if five members in a family have five different opinions, that's going to create more problems, I think. I think one has to make up their own mind. Economy for SDGs, according to this, make up your mind according to the Dhamma. It says that you still maintain a Sila and Samadhi, therefore, and through your Prajna, with all these sutras and everything, the monk is teaching us those are lessons to learn from. Because in my family, I have five children and so many grandchildren and in-laws. But if I were to listen to everybody, I think there would be chaos. So I listen to everybody, I don't argue, I listen to everybody and make up my own mind. For instance, December, I have a choice of joining my family for Christmas, because they're all Christians,
going to put this in the family. But I have decided to go to Perth if I get a place in the retreats. So it's like that, and they respect me for it, because I say it in a nice way, and I help them towards their Christmas things as well, make a Christmas pudding or something and leave it for them. So I think that way, I think one has to look after oneself, your own needs, because you're the one who has to die. When you die, you have to die alone with what you've done. So I felt like adding that. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, different people can give different opinions. Ultimately, if we are the ones going to get the decision, so we may have our own opinion also. And then we can look at all these different opinions, possibilities, and weigh the situation, and then we get a decision. And that also may get a lot of criticisms, because whatever the decision, always have pros and cons. So we can't have the perfect solution sometimes. It always have pros and cons, and that is the condition life. So we can't have a perfect situation in anywhere, because it is so kind of an impermanent, unsatisfactory nature. It is kind of an inherent to this whole conditioned world. But depending on the situation, depending on the circumstances, we may take a decision and we continue. That's it. I mean, that's all we can do at the moment. Yeah. I think we can wind up the session today. We have spent 1.5 hours discussing Dhamma, going through some interesting sutta, and had a nice discussion. And with that, actually, we were able to accumulate some merits. We share these merits with all the celestial beings, with all the past relatives, and we share these merits with all the beings who are in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, Roshan, Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavatacham hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavatacham hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavatacham hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattaja bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasattaja bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam. Akasattaja bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idango nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idango nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idango nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.